You would think, listening to some people, that things are absolutely horrible for believers in the United States today. You would think that it was one terrible thing after another, but we have it so easy, so incredibly easy, compared to other people in the world as far as believers. Let me read you a couple of things. This is from Christianity Today, back in December of last year. So it was looking forward to 2012. There are no surprises in Release International's list of predicted hotspots for persecution in 2012. If anything, the organization fears the plight of Christians around the world may get worse. The organization has received reports that from partners that Christians are coming under increasing suspicion in North Korea. Practicing Christianity is banned in the closed-off communist country, and anyone caught with a Bible faces torture, imprisonment, and possibly death. It is monitoring events closely following the death of dictator Kim Jong-il, but there is little optimism that the change of leadership to Kim Jong-un will ease their plight. In China, authorities are considering legalizing the detention of people considered a threat to national security, a move that would put lawyers and Christian human rights campaigners at risk. There are additional concerns that the change of leadership later in 2012 may prompt authorities to tighten their grip on Christians and potential dissidents. Bob Fu of partner organization China Aid said religious freedom conditions are at their lowest point since 1982. Countries with large Muslim and Hindu populations, the prevalence of apostasy charges against believers is a worrying trend, the charity said. In addition to Hindu and Muslim converts, accusations are being leveled against evangelists and other existing believers who speak about their faith. Political rhetoric has turned increasingly against Christians in Iran, where Christian faith is regarded as a threat to the Islamic Revolution. Christians have been arrested, beaten, imprisoned, and killed for their faith there. Other forms of harassment include expelling Christians from jobs and universities, phone tapping, and using relatives to spy on them. Release's partners warn that the persecution of Christians in Pakistan is increasing day by day as radical Islam continues to spread. Two senior government ministers, Salman Taseer and Shahbaz Bhatti, were murdered by extremists after calling for reform of the notorious blasphemy laws. Other areas of concern for the coming year include Nigeria, where dozens have been killed in Christmas Day church attacks. Boko Haram, the Islamist military group claiming responsibility, wants to impose strict Sharia law on the country. While India may be the world's largest democracy and one of the fastest-growing economies, there are signs of a growing hostility towards Christian witness. Christians have been particularly alarmed by a recent call from the Hindu militant group Vishwa Hindu Parishad to change the constitution to allow anyone who converts Hindus to be beheaded. Anti-conversion laws are being interpreted to mean a ban on evangelism, and some pastors have been accused of converting Hindus by force, Release said. Others of concern include Central Asian countries and Sri Lanka, where churches are being forced to register with the authorities. Andy Dipper, chief executive of Release International, said across the world the number of Christians imprisoned for their faith looks set to increase in 2012. Okay. And from persecution.com, which is Voice of the Martyrs, we have a Christian worker. This is more recent stuff. This is the latest news reports around the world for believers. A Christian worker in Kyrgyzstan has filed a case against a village Islamic leader who, along with a small mob, attacked the worker and his friends as they attempted to distribute humanitarian items. In Kenya, at least 17 Christians were killed in simultaneous attacks on two churches near the Somali border on Sunday, July 1st. A group of masked assailants launched grenades and opened fire with assault rifles. In Iran, Iran's Revolutionary Court recently upheld Pastor Farshid Fatih's 6-year sentence for political offenses, forcing him to complete a prison term that began more than 18 months ago. Iranian officials recently closed one of only 4 remaining churches in Tehran that offered Farsi language services. In China, members of the Shouwang House Church continue to face harassment from Beijing authorities. Most recently, security officials denied the church's student group access to 2 sports facilities. Nigeria, the Islamic extremist group Boko Haram attacked 2 more Nigerian churches on Sunday, June 10th, the second such attack in 2 weeks. A suicide car bomber killed 2 and injured 40 others in an attack. Indonesia, at least 22 churches have been forced to close in Indonesia this year due to mounting pressure on local governments. In Laos, a young Kamu woman is being persecuted by her family by converting to Christianity. family of 17-year-old woman has burned her Bible and hymn book, forbade her to attend church, and even threatened her. So in the rest of the world, things are not so easy for believers. Not so easy at all. You might say to yourself, well, is this something unusual? Is this something strange? Is this something that's going to pass? And that takes us into our passage in 1 Peter chapter 4, down in verse 12. 1 Peter chapter 4, down in verse 12. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Messiah, keep on rejoicing, so that also at the revelation of His glory you may rejoice with exultation. People look at this verse, and I've heard of people using it in strange ways. The fiery ordeal does not refer to losing your job. It doesn't refer to a physical illness. It doesn't refer to difficulties on the job. This is specifically referring to people who are suffering for the sake of the Messiah. It could be something easy, like people don't sit with you at lunch anymore. It could be something that's more difficult, like some of these other people. It could be that you actually lose your job because of something they're asking you to do that you don't do. Something that they're telling you not to do that you say you have to do. People who are insisting that you, for instance, would falsify something or get up in front of customers and make false statements, something like that. Well, the only proper answer is to say not only no, but absolutely no. And then whatever happens, happens. But that's standing up for God and standing up for Messiah. It could be that the government tells us that we are not to assemble together for the sake of Messiah. We're not to name His name. We're not to have any of our Bibles in our house. In which case, we would hold out our hands and say, get the handcuffs. Just take us now. Because we would have to, as the disciples, the apostles said, that we need to obey God rather than man. So this saying is, it shouldn't be a surprise that believers are under pressure, that they are under attack, they're under persecution. Let's read on a little bit, and then we'll kind of go back through this piece at a time. Verse 14. If you are reviled for the name of Messiah, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. Make sure that none of you suffers as a murderer or thief or evildoer or a troublesome meddler. But if anyone suffers as a believer, he is not to be ashamed, but is to glorify God in His name. For it is time for judgment to begin with the household of God. And if it begins with us first, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? If it was with difficulty that the righteous is saved, what will become of the godless man and the sinner? Therefore, those also who suffer according to the will of God shall entrust their souls to a faithful Creator in doing what is right. So this is talking about not just enduring the trial. It's saying that this trial comes upon us for our testing. Testing is a word, the Greek word there is used in other places of temptation. It's the idea here that it has come upon us for our strengthening through testing. That when we go through testing successfully, then at the other end of it we glorify God and we become stronger people. See, the purpose of, it's like when people take products off the assembly line. You know, people take a smattering of cell phones off of an assembly line, for instance, and they test them. They put them through the ringer. They put them through temperature chambers. They heat them up. They cool them down. They chill them. They drop them. They do all kinds of terrible things to them. Not for the purpose of breaking them, but for the purpose of proving that they have been built successfully. And so, too, God puts us through all these trials, not for the sake of making us fail, but for the sake of bringing us to the point of a greater success, so that His name might be glorified, and so that we might exalt Him, that we were able to share those sufferings successfully, that we were thought worthy in order to share the sufferings of Messiah. So the things it says about this fire ordeal, this testing, or this opposition, it calls it testing. It talks about exaltation, that this is not something that we should just put on a dour face and our camel-haired shirts and sit by the side of the road and throw ashes on ourselves, but rather something we should make with exaltation. Our prime example of that was the people in the early Messianic community, early church, people like Paul, who were, when he was imprisoned, were singing songs in the middle of the night, exaltation, that we're blessed if we're reviled for the name of Messiah. That's a blessing, because it is affirming that we are partakers of that kingdom which is hated by the world. The world hates it, the world hates us. The world hated our Messiah, the world hates us. We've got to be careful that if we are suffering, it's not because we brought it on ourselves. It says murderer, thief, evildoer, troublesome meddler. You can't mess up, you can't embezzle money from your job and get fired and say, hey, fired me because I'm a believer. They were out to get me from day one. Well, was there cause for them to fire you, perhaps? Well, that doesn't matter. Yeah, it does. It does. We are not to suffer for being an evildoer or a troublesome meddler. That's an interesting one. It's like somebody who is getting in other people's business, and so nobody wants to talk to him or her anymore. They say, well, it's because I was sharing the gospel with them. Well, no, it's not. It's because you're in their business all the time. They got tired of it. Told you to get lost. But instead, it's to suffer as a believer. And if you do so, you're not to be ashamed. Not be ashamed that you're stuck in jail. Not be ashamed that you suffer loss of something, your position, your property, because you're a believer. It's interesting. It's like if this judgment that's talking about in the house of God, it's not talking about judgment judicially, but rather it's judgment for the sake of testing. It's the idea that you have the judgment just basically touching upon believers, but yet for those who are the unrighteous, they are the ones that the judgment is really going to fall upon. That's what it's speaking about towards the end of it, verses 17 and 18. It's like, yeah, okay, we're enduring this for a short period of time. You think this is bad. You don't want to imagine what God has for those who are the godless and the sinner, those who have rejected Him. That their punishment is not going to be just this little bit of persecution for a little bit of time, but it's going to be bad and it's going to be eternal. So our response in verse 19 is that if we suffer according to the will of God, that we shall entrust our souls to a faithful Creator in doing what is right. In other words, don't let it shake you up. Don't let it shake your faith. The fact that people think we're stupid, people think we're nuts, people are deranged, people think we're primitive and ignorant and backwards and all the other things that people use. That we're hateful and unenlightened and intolerant and all the rest of the things they call us. You just kind of nod, say whatever you want to believe, but that's not who we are. And trust God that He is doing what is right, that He is in control, that He is faithful, and keep doing what's right. Don't let them intimidate us into stopping or backing down or of watering down our message. Too many today, that has been the response. And it hasn't even been, it's kind of interesting to watch that these people in other countries who are suffering so terribly are holding fast to their faith. People in this country are ejecting from sound doctrine left and right, just because other people sniff disdainfully at it. It hasn't taken much for a lot of the so-called leaders to water down or to compromise or to walk away. God said, don't do that. Don't do that. Entrust our souls to a faithful Creator in doing what is right. Well, it started this passage by saying it's no surprise, there should be no surprise. There are other places in Scripture where it describes what we're going to be subject to. One of them is in Matthew chapter 15. I wanted to look at that. Matthew chapter 15, down to verse 17. Okay. Oops. I'm sorry. That's not the verse. It's Matthew chapter 10. Chapter 10, down to 17. I don't know what happened to that Matthew section. But I'll find it. Okay. So Matthew chapter 10. And I believe, just give me half a second here. Alright, Matthew chapter 10. Let's stop there. Okay. Down verse 17. But beware of men. This is speaking about the, speaking to the disciples as they were heading out. Yeshua was sending them out. But it applies also to us and some of the other generic things that Yeshua has said. He said, but beware of men, for they will hand you over to the courts and scourge you in their synagogues. You will even be brought before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. Right? Yeshua was not, he was not sugarcoating what was in store. He was laying it right out there. He was saying, this is what's going to happen. That you're not going to go out with this message and people are going to accept you with open arms and it's going to be warm and fuzzy and people would slap themselves on the forehead and say, of course, I always wanted to know that. But instead, well, some people will. Some people will receive the message, but other people will not. Other people would act like this. Hand us over to the courts and the synagogues. Governors and kings, the political authorities, be put in jail. That's certainly true all over the world. Verse 19. But when they hand you over, do not worry about how or what you are to say, for it will be given you in that hour what you are to say. But it is not you who speak, but it is the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. Brother will betray brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. You will be hated by all because of my name, but it is the one who has endured to the end who will be saved. See, hated by all, it's funny, you can talk generically about God in a room. You can talk generically about, pick any religion, you know, Buddha or Allah or Krishna or the other gods all around the world. Even some of the pagan gods of mythology may have even become, some of them, subject of superhero movies, which is real gas. But, and everybody's fine with that. Everybody's okay with that. But you mentioned Yeshua's name in a room. And a sudden, uncomfortable quiet comes over it. And maybe even somebody will point out to you how much they resent you bringing that name into that room. Somebody else will, maybe somebody will just turn around and leave. And in general, it will not be a cheerful gathering after that. I mean, sometimes it's different. But in general, that's how it is. You look on the internet, and it's looking at social media and things like that, it's an eye-opener sometimes, because we tend to either be with friends or be with other believers who at least know what we believe and know why we believe it. But when you go on the internet, you see what other people are posting about believers and about religion in general. Sometimes it's shockingly cruel. It's not very favorable right now, at least in the crowd that tends to post on websites. You got to understand, you're selecting there. You're not just surveying 50, 60, 70-year-olds. You're dealing with the generation coming up. You're generally dealing with the people who are very vocal, generally dealing with people who have an axe to grind in some cases, people who are in mild agreement with articles tend to not to post. It's generally people who disagree violently who tend to post. So you tend to select a little bit for what crowd that you get the comments posted. But wow, the amount of really awful feeling that you see posted there is really astounding. It's really astounding. It really just kind of shocks you sometimes to see what they're posting. So that's just what the people of this world think.
Can I
now, can you wait till because you just kind of look at this and you say, what in the world is going on here? because tolerance seems to be tolerance for anybody except Yeshua and those who believe in him. It's like people will tolerate anything, almost, except for us. And the thing is that it's the name of Yeshua. Verse 23, but whenever they persecute you in one city, flee to the next, for truly I say to you, you will not finish going through the cities of Israel until the Son of Man comes. The disciple is not above his teacher, nor a slave above his master. It is enough for the disciple that he become like his teacher, and the slave like his master. They have called the head of the household Beelzebul. How much more will they malign the members of his household? Therefore do not fear them, for there is nothing concealed that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known. What I tell you in the darkness, speak in the light, and what you hear whispered in your ear, proclaim upon the housetops. Do not fear those who kill the body but are unable to kill the soul, but rather fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. That's really to be our perspective, that we are to set our sights upon serving God and not say, oh, I just couldn't do that. Well, yes, you could. You just didn't want to bear the consequences. Because God has commanded us to do and not do certain things. God has commanded us to stand up for his name. There's not supposed to be any such thing as a believer in the closet. I mean, if I were living in China under persecution, I wouldn't march into the police station and say, hi, I'm a believer, but I would not be secret about it to my friends and to my neighbors and coworkers. I would find the right time and the right place, and I would tell them about it. We've dealt with a couple of people, particularly in the Jewish community, who were secret believers in the life of our congregation. This one gentleman, he had been a believer for a while and never told his parents, and so we had convinced him that, yeah, it's not a good idea to be a believer and not tell anyone, so you really ought to break it to your parents. His parents did not take it well. He was Jewish. But they are at least on speaking terms now, but it was very, very difficult. But yet it was something that had to be done. And they wound up not coming to his wedding, and there are other things that were going on there that was really difficult, but it had to be done. And he bore the consequences. And now, eventually, they are at least on speaking terms. But they're not exactly. It's funny, the mother came over and was babysitting and went to the basement and found a box of Jews for Jesus literature, and she was like, she ran out of the house. It was like finding a box of porn or something. It was like, I can't be in the house with that stuff. So, but just the length at which people will go, just the strong feelings that people have about Yeshua. But that should not deter us. We are called to not only bear up under it, but to exalt in it. Now, that doesn't mean having a martyr complex. Like I said, if I lived in China, that would mean going to the authorities. It doesn't mean that I would deliberately walk into the, I don't know if there is such a thing, but a Maryland atheist convention and run up on the podium and grab the microphone and say, you know, today salvation has come to this house. I think I would have to be wearing sneakers and have to run really, really fast after that. Because these people need to hear the message, but that's probably not the venue. Probably not the venue. I mean, people go as missionaries over all the world, and people go in ministers and minister even to Muslim countries. But they have a strategy, they have a tactic, and they execute it. They execute it in ways that they can get the message out. And we need to be like that in our daily lives. We have somebody if we have somebody that we know that is hostile to hearing the message of Yeshua, sometimes a flank attack is better than a frontal assault. A little bit of hints dropped here and there. Maybe raising questions in them that they don't know the answers to, or maybe they know the wrong answers to. Things they always thought they knew. There's a record, a comedy record put out in the 60s or so, I think it was in the early 70s. Everything You Know Is Wrong was the title of the record. Sometimes that's what people have to find out for themselves, that everything they know is wrong. Fireside Theater, Everything You Know Is Wrong. That sometimes you walk up to somebody and say, you're wrong, they'll push back. But if you ask them questions they don't know the answer to, or maybe that's a stupid answer, you let them give the stupid answer, then stop and think about it. Sometimes they'll stop and they'll say, after a couple seconds, that's pretty stupid, isn't it? I say, well, yeah, kinda. And then help them to find the truth. to find the real answers. We are just so weak. We just run and turn and run. Somebody doesn't even have to say boo. Somebody just has to look like they're about to say boo. And we'll go running off into the forest. Whereas people in other countries are enduring such horrors for the sake of Yeshua, that I think that we can develop a bit stronger backbone to get the message out to those all around us, to be a little bolder, to be clearer in our message, to bring that message to people who are hurting. Because people really looking for answers. They're hurting, they're scared, they're hopeless. And here we have the message. And that message, as Yeshua said, doesn't belong under a bushel basket. It doesn't belong hidden in our closet. It doesn't belong under our beds. It belongs getting out into the world. The danger is that some people will react strongly and negatively. But the blessing is that some people won't. Some people absolutely have to hear that message. They are hurting for the message. They just don't know it. They just don't understand that's what they're missing. Let's pray. Dearest God and Father, forgive us for times when we have shrunk back, we've choked, we've coughed, we've moved on instead of doing what we ought to have done. Forgive us for the caving in, not even with persecution, but from the threat of persecution. Teach us to be bold that we might be faithful, that we might fully trust in you, that we might exalt in those testings that you bring our way, that your name might be glorified and the name of Yeshua might be lifted up. Amen.